The Accidental Entrepreneur is produced by Beinhacker Law and brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors. One of One Productions, the New Jersey-based podcast studio that produces and edits both audio and video podcasts. They sell equipment for the average podcaster and have even created a guesting kit exclusively for our listeners. North Authentic, the conscious hair care marketplace offering the cleanest brands from around the world. The Healthy Place, the e-commerce site with thousands of supplements to help you live a healthier life, along with natural solutions for chronic pain, stress, anxiety, depression, sleeplessness, and much, much more. And be sure to support the podcast by ordering some logo merchandise from our online store. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
You know, you have the you have the white dog. You have the clear whiskey, which we just got back from West Overton, which is distilling for the first time in, let's say, 100 years. And they do offer their white whiskey. Now, what you get by enjoying the clear whiskey, the unaged whiskey, is you get to understand and see what that juice is before it goes into the barrel. Before the barrel and the juice mix and those take over, you really get to enjoy the notes of, again,
right out of the still, right? I mean, it's basically been dripped into a bottle and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you want to take out, you want the heart's cuts. It's not, you want the best part. You don't want to kill anybody and you want really good tasting spirit. But to your point, you're right. You literally now have something that you can hand somebody and drink right away. Now you have something for cocktails.
Yeah.
So you have the white whiskey for cocktails. It's going to have a different characteristic, but you've got the grain notes, the floral notes of the barrel notes, the grain notes, all those things that are going to be in that spirit, which are just as wonderful to enjoy.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hey, it's Rich Sheen with the Fermented Adventure Podcast. We visit distilleries, cideries, meaderies, wineries, and breweries on our Fermented Adventure. We look forward to seeing you on our next Fermented Adventure.
All right, Rich. So thanks for joining me on my podcast. I think Andy Poole connected us, right? He's the guy.
Yes, I'm excited. This is so much fun. This is the first time I've been interviewed for my podcast on somebody else's podcast.
Oh, really?
So yeah, normally I'm the one asking questions, and now I have no idea. This is uncharted territory.
That's funny. I do a lot of guesting. It's a good way to promote the podcast. So I guess for as a lawyer and I guess as a host, and there used to be an event I used to go to called PodMax where you could, as a host, go on. It's like a whole, well, it was in person, but a whole Zoom thing for a day. You would get paired up with three people and you would interview them. So you could pick up three episodes or whatever, or you could be a guest too. I think that was a fee, but the hosts were free. And well, it kind of fell apart. They're not doing it anymore. But I used to go on, spend a whole day meeting, and I've made a lot of friends through that. So I've been on their podcast. They've been on my podcast, done dual episodes. You know, maybe at when I told you I'm working on a series, a distillery series, but you're the first person I've met. Distilleries are a little bit harder than breweries. But
they're all, I mean, it's all a matter of when you go and you just meet these people. Everybody really has a great story to tell, and they're very open to wanting to share what they're doing. But it's hard because in the day-to-day activity, just getting that, you know, or an email or things like that, they filter stuff through like that, or just a call. It's just how we got together. It's through an introduction. So exactly. I think that's the best way.
Yeah, you can't just reach out there and they're all so busy doing stuff.
Yeah.
So, okay. So tell me a little bit about your background, you know, where you came from, and I know you're in the real estate business, right? You're a realtor, but what kind of brought you to the, you know, and I like bourbon. That's what brought me. So I'm a big bourbon drinker, but what kind of got you into distilleries and started that whole thing? And we'll talk more about the podcast.
Okay. Part of this is, you know, what I do day to day, which pays my bills, is I'm a real estate agent. So I work in the Philadelphia area. I work in Chester, Bucks, Montgomery, Philadelphia, and Delaware counties. I've been a real estate agent since 1998. The part about the what we do with the Fermented Adventure, Dawn Ranieri, my girlfriend and I, we were at a festival in Manayunk, and that's an area in Philadelphia. Okay. And we were walking up the main street, and there was a little sign at the bottom of the street that said gin tastings with an arrow.
Okay.
And we both looked at each other and said, do you want to go? And neither of us at the time liked gin.
Yeah,
it wasn't like anything.
Yeah. My wife likes gin. I don't know.
What I can tell you is we love gin because there's a difference. And this is part of, you know, the experience that we had. So we both make a left-hand turn and, you know, the distillery off the main street, it's Walter Palmer's Liberty Gin, and it's uphill. Manayunk's a hilly part of the city.
Okay.
And while you're walking uphill, you think it's a short walk with a little sign at the end of the road,
right?
But this turned out to be a huge hike. It was probably a quarter of a mile.
Oh,
but when you're hot and you're trying, so the whole conversation was, do you still want to do this? We still have more of a hill to go. You sure you want to go? And so finally, we get to this building and we're really from the outside. There's another sign that says gin tastings through here. Okay. And it's an old industrial mill building. And we walk in and there's Walter. He's got a couple of people around this small makeshift bar that distills back behind this glass wall. And we get introduced to craft gin.
Okay.
And craft gin is not the same thing as what you'd find as, you know, the large
Tanqueray or whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
And again, not that there's anything wrong with
Sapphire
Tanqueray, Bombay.
Right.
But, you know, what we're talking about now is more of a, you know, new American spirit, a new American botanical spirit that's full of floral notes and citrus notes and spicy notes. And most people say they don't like gin. Why? What's your experience?
I got sick on it in college and I just can't.
Everybody got sick on it in college.
My wife loves gin.
Why did we all choose gin and have that experience? And a lot for people, that's their experience, or they don't like the juniper forwardness of the gin. They don't like that, drinking a pine tree, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
So what you find is with the new American spirit, the new botanical gin, you're going to find lots of flavor, lots of character. We just were in Vermont last month and we visited Caledonia Spirits. Caledonia Spirits makes Bar Hill Gin. Okay. And Bar Hill Gin, there's two ingredients, juniper and honey. And what they do is the honey becomes all the botanicals. And, you know, when you start to understand what they're doing, the honey, the natural honey that grows in Vermont that they're using, the bees are pollinating off of all these flowers and wildflowers.
Right.
So it's almost as if they have 250 different other botanicals because of what's coming into the honey, but it's two ingredients, honey and gin. And then they take it and they barrel age that. They distill it. After they distill it, they'll barrel age it and then they'll store it in new American oak barrels. And it's a phenomenal gin. And I will share that with people who say, you know, I'm a bourbon person or I'm a rum person.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you get that, it's a whole different world. So that's how Fermented Adventure started. We hiked up the hill. We both lived to talk about it. We met Walter Palmer, had an amazing experience, just a great gentleman. And he introduced us to craft spirits. And from there, we started, hey, you want to relive that experience? Do you want to go here? And we really, in the beginning, had concentrated on distilleries. And then we found our way into cideries and meaderies. And breweries have sorted, you know, we can find a brewery everywhere, and that's certainly something we enjoy too.
Right. Well, cideries though are hard cider, right? Or is not necessarily?
Yeah, hard cider.
Yeah, okay. So yep. What are meaderies?
Because you don't want to be called soft cider. I don't know. I had a whole conversation with Emily Ritchie of the Northwest Cider Club or Northwest Cider Association that, you know, they don't call it hard wine, right? They call it wine.
Well, there is no non-alcoholic wine. It's grape juice.
Yeah, right? Essentially. Yeah. They don't. Yeah.
No, but you could call non-alcoholic cider soft cider, I guess, right?
You could. But I guess there's just a connotation they don't want. It was a whole nuance. But when you start to get to that point, what do they want to brand themselves at?
Right.
How do they want to be known? And that's part of it.
Now, what I asked you, you mentioned meaderies. Is that what you said?
Yep.
What
are meaderies? Mead, which is mead. Oh, mead is
like wine mead. Mead.
Right. Yes. Not meat. M-E-A-T. Right. M-E-A-D. Yeah. Mead.
Okay.
So that's a fermented honey wine. And again, what the craft space is doing with mead right now and, you know, fortifying it or infusing it with so many flavors. We have a cidery and meadery that we absolutely love down in Delaware, Liquid Alchemy Beverages, and they're winning awards by far. If you're in the Wilmington area, that's definitely some, and not to say that, you know, you got Melavino. I mean, I can list all these great places and, you know, Plowman Cider. I feel like I got to list them all now.
Yeah. Right.
They're all our favorite child.
Yeah. So, but when you think of mead, you think of like Camelot, you know, I mean, that, you know, that's when you think of mead being in the, you know, Game of Thrones. They were probably drinking a lot of mead in that show.
Yeah. But, and there's some connection to that too, that gives them, some sort of, just the recognition of what you're talking about. But mead can be served. You can drink mead just like you would drink wine with dinner. You can drink it also simply by itself. That's where that craft is. Same thing with cider. Cider has become so wonderfully produced now that you can have a bottle of cider that some of them we've shared that people would say, wow, this almost is like a nice oaked Chardonnay or, you know, a nice wine that you would compare it to.
So now are you starting to see mead, like craft mead, in liquor store, you know, local stores? Like you're seeing small batch gin and small batch bourbon and stuff like that?
Yep. I mean, you know, again, if it sells, these businesses will put it on the shelves. And it's like anything else. You know, you're an attorney and you put it out there as far as the different areas that you serve. I mean, if you wanted to go off in another area and started to practice that part of the law, hey, you know, you just bring people more familiar to that. And that's who gravitate towards you. So it's the same thing as people become more aware of that need and want more of it or whatever that product is. These places are stocking it on the shelves.
Yeah, well, but some of it has to do with the, what do they call it? The pressing or, you know, the number of cases that they're producing. Sometimes it's not enough to go, to get here if they're in the Midwest or I don't know. Right. So there's some breweries, for example, you can't find it out here because they just make enough to sell in their area and, you know, regionally, and they make a lot of money and they're fine.
Yeah. I mean, that just becomes scale. You know, and like you pointed out, yeah, I mean, let's say for somebody like Liquid Alchemy Beverages that produces in Delaware, well, maybe they'll distribute to just a, you know, one or two liquor stores around the area, but they won't do national distribution. I know with Pennsylvania, in Pennsylvania, the PLCB, you know, when you want to be on their shelves, there's some limited stuff, but they will require a good allocation, which some distilleries won't be able to touch because of their small production, but others will.
Right.
Some people have different models and different business brands.
Sure. All right. So you met this guy, Walter. Did he only make gin or he distilled other?
He makes something called Manayunk Moonshine.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds strong.
Yeah. It's actually good. I think for where he was, and I think for his mindset, he wanted to have an alternative at his cocktail bar. For those that would still say, you know, I don't care for gin, now he has something else. But his main focus is is that gin.
Okay. And is that something like I could get in New Jersey?
I'm
not sure.
Yeah. I mean, I know he distributes in New York, Pennsylvania, for sure. You would just need to go to his website and Walter Palmer's Liberty Gin and see where he distributes. So there very well could be liquor stores in New Jersey. Knowing Walter, he probably does.
Okay. All right. I'll check it out. So, but that's not where the story just ended, right? Because you didn't go and then walk back with your girlfriend and say, oh, let's start a podcast.
No, the podcast, podcast started, back in 2019. And what it was a progression. So the first thing we did was we started visiting places. It became
as a hobby,
a weekend.
Right?
Yeah, really. Yeah. And it became a weekend thing. And the next thing was we started social media, just posting pictures and what we're drinking and where we're going. And what I had found, and even I think Dawn pointed it out to me before I even really conceptualized it, was you really enjoy talking to these people.
Yeah.
And you listen to a bunch of podcasts. Why don't you start a podcast around what we're doing and visiting with the people that we're visiting with and telling their stories? Because I think that's important. I like, again, talking to people, but sharing their stories because, you know, like your podcast, these are entrepreneurs.
Sure.
And in some cases, some of these for them are accidents. A lot of brewers we talk about
were
started as a home brew.
Right. In their basement or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very common. Yeah.
But it's so many. It's funny. The last couple podcasts we've done, and we just did one with Old Bedford Brewing Company in Bedford, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Dave's wife purchased the home brewing kit for him as a gift.
Right.
Just, kind of give him something to do.
Yeah.
And
he was good at it.
Yeah. You know, next thing you know, he's growing hops in the backyard.
Yeah.
So
that's funny.
Accidentally, these become businesses for people. And a lot of cases, if you know a bunch of home brewers, they're always looking to share, get that recognition,
sure.
get that feedback. What'd you think of what I made? And enough people tell you you're really good at it. Now you're looking to expand into a larger system. So, that's some of the entrepreneurial stories we like to tell.
I think it gives you a connection when you know who's behind it is. But, I was talking to somebody the other day, and I think, from coming from a home brew, right? If you're making beer, let's use beer as a good example, in your basement, and you're getting good at it and people like what you're drinking, then you're like, well, maybe we should start a brewery, whatever. And you can start something small or rent space somewhere. I don't know, whatever. That's a little different than distilling liquor, because liquor has a shelf life, you can't just distill liquor and sell it, right?
You're not allowed to distill
element.
Liquor at home either. So
right. Well, you can, right.
That's
illegal.
Illegal.
That's part of it. Right.
But so many of the distilleries we talk to, I practice a little bit, some of them, before they do anything, will go to Moonshine University and get the basis and understand the equipment, or they'll start working with other distilleries to see what they're doing to understand the whole process of distillation. But you're right. It's to start a distillery. A lot of it, it seems, the people that, not all of them, either come from a home brewing or a brewing background. So they understand fermentation. Or they come from a science chemistry background.
Right.
So they already are doing that, maybe distillation form of commercial use. So they have a good handle on that too. And then you get the people that are buying the stuff off the internet and doing it at home.
Right. Yeah. But if you and I started a brewery, we probably could get product on the shelf or available for use pretty quickly. If we start
a
distillery, it's going to be what? At least a few years before we can have anything to sell that's been aged and properly bottled and ready?
Well, I mean, you can look at something like, short of getting the equipment and the grain, you can, vodka as a spirit, you can do very quickly. That's
right. Cause it's not aged or anything.
It's not aged.
It's a neutral spirit.
No, but if you're looking at aging, that's why when you look at a lot of the craft distillers, they'll start with vodka. They'll start with rum. They'll start with gin. They'll start with the clear spirits, because they're not tying up all their initial capital in what's going in the barrel.
Right.
And in some cases, you'll see the progression again for them to start out with, let's say, a 15-gallon barrel, go to a 30-gallon barrel, and then a 53-gallon barrel, that, the age time is shorter in those smaller barrels so that they can start getting money back and producing something that, their fans and followers will begin to try and enjoy.
So is gin is not aged?
No, I mean, gin can be aged,
but
gin as a spirit is not aged.
Ah, so there you go. So it's easier to get into than if you bourbon distillery and we had to wait.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, a lot of distilleries, not a lot, but you have the white dog, you have the clear whiskey, which, right. We just got back from West Overton, which is distilling for the first time in, let's say, 100 years. And they do offer their white whiskey. Now, what you get by enjoying the clear whiskey, the unaged whiskey, is you get to understand and see what that juice is before it goes into the barrel. Before the barrel and the juice mix and those take over, you really get to enjoy the notes of, again,
right out of the still, right? I mean, it's basically been dripped into a bottle and that's it.
Yep. I mean, you want to take out, you want the heart's cuts. It's not, you want the best part. You don't want to kill anybody and right. You want really good tasting spirit. But to your point, you're right. You literally now have something that you can hand somebody and drink right away. Now you have something for cocktails.
Yeah.
So you have the white whiskey for cocktails. It's going to have a different characteristic, but you've got the grain notes, the floral notes of the barrel notes, the grain notes, all those things that are going to be in that spirit, which are just as wonderful to enjoy.
Is the alcohol content higher or lower?
It could be. White whiskey? I mean, it could be. And it also depends when you think about, all right, so we're going into a barrel at a certain proof and then you lose what some of that. So it's going to be a higher proof while it's resting in the barrel. Now you may want to cut it with, you may want to cut it with water again. So you proof that down. So yes, you could have that white whiskey at a higher proof, but you could also say before we bottle this, before we serve this and sell this, we don't want to give this to the public at 155 proof or 125 proof. We may want to proof it down below 100. A lot of moonshiners. We just picked up, I think it was 155 proof moonshine or something like that. That's
something like gasoline.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
It'll
Bacardi 151. We all had that in college. Yeah. I mean, look, I cut down bourbon when I drink it, and I'm only drinking probably I guess bourbon's like 60 to 80 proof, maybe on average.
Most of them you're looking, at least you're gonna start at 80. Unless it becomes a flavored, then you want to. If it becomes flavored, let's say they're adding honey or other things like orange or apple or cinnamon, right. You may have a lower proof for that. Most bourbons are going to come in at least at 80. Then you get the barrel strength and proof strength, and you're looking at three digits easily. You're right. And to the point that you just made, there's that conversation. Do you drink or do you want to offer that bourbon or rye or whiskey at a higher proof and give the consumer the ability, like you do, to proof it down and add water to enjoy it at, because what'll happen is it'll open up, it'll change the flavor profile.
Sure.
Or do you want to say that master distiller, the distiller that did the work on that bourbon that releases it at an 86 or a 92 or whatever, says this is the this is exactly where this should be. This was the best characteristics of what went in the barrel and what came out of the barrel. This is exactly what we wanted to share. This is what our experience, for you, this is the best experience you're going to have because we've taken this to where it should be.
And just for everybody listening, proof is twice the alcohol content, right? So if something's 40% alcohol, it's 80 proof. Is that right?
Yep. ABV, alcohol by volume.
Got it. And a lot of people don't know that. So,
I mean, I'm still not,
obviously if something's 150 proof, it can't be 150% alcohol. That's right. Not possible mathematically. So makes sense.
Mitch, you bring up a great point. And it's something that we just assume, and I'm glad you brought that up, but I never stopped to research why, if the obvious is there, why you have to state it twice and have to do the math.
Yeah. Where the word proof comes from.
Yeah. Why can't you just, when you share and say, well, it's ABV and then it's proof. Well, we know if you take ABV and multiply it times two, unless I'm wrong and somebody's going to say, no, that's not the way it works. And this is why I should probably have this.
You're the Fermented Adventure podcast host. You should do the research, figure that out. I'm pretty sure.
I should. This is part of the adventure.
So yeah, if it's 42% ABV, it's going to be 84 proof,
Right, right.
But I'm sure that's come something, when they couldn't, I don't know, some historical thing with distillers or something like that. I don't know.
That's going to be next on my research. Why is it? Yeah. Why it is it? Yeah.
There you go. So Do you have any good, I want you to share like some of your favorite places you visited. Most of your visits have been within the United States, or have you gone overseas?
No, we've been to Bimber Distillery in London. Okay. We've been there. That was a great, so again, this is pre-COVID. We were in London. We did the interview February 28th, 2020.
Okay.
And, you know, Matt McKay, we had a great conversation. You know, he and I are like, hey, Matt, when you come back, you know, you come to the States, you know, I'll tell you what bottles to bring. And it's Bimber's becoming recognized as an amazing, what's that?
That a gin distillery?
No, it's bourbon. It's oh, so it's Bimber,
because you think of London, you think of gin, like
BB. No, you do. Something. And that's why they have such high recognition right now. Bimber is Polish moonshine. Oh. So what they'll do is they'll take their juice, they'll age it. They do open tank fermentation. They'll distill that down. And it's just it's a wonderful spirit. But we did that February 28th. I met Matt. Matt's like, yeah, I come to DC all the time. I'm like, bring bottles. And then, you know, 3 weeks later, you know, they're not able, you know, I don't know what their distribution is.
Right.
But what happens is that they're so well known right now in that area. There's nothing that's making it to the United States.
Right.
At least
that's the problem, right? Because, you know, there's wineries in Napa that they have people on their list and local people that, you know, eat up all their volume and they don't need to spend money trying to get on shelves and stuff like that.
And to that point, that's why I think for us, first and foremost, why we love to go, whether it's breweries, like right now, if you're into breweries and you love beer, I mean, you'll see some, you know, especially around this time, these breweries are doing such limited releases.
Sure, and special, unless you, fall stuff, right?
Right. You're not going to find that on the shelves. They're not distributing, you know, nationally.
Right.
So you have to go. And when you go, what happens is, you find some of these other expressions that they're brewing that you wouldn't have known about. And, you know, that they become places that you want to go back to again. And you develop a connection, even with the breweries, the people there, the people that you're drinking with, the people that are just enjoying, you get perspective of the person sitting next to you as to why they like that IPA and what they're getting out of that. And then somebody next to them say, I don't drink IPAs. I only drink Pilsners or lagers. Right. That's the fun of it.
Yeah, definitely. And there are thousands. I mean, I told you I'm also working on a brewery series. I mean, I just been connecting with people. I mean, there are thousands of breweries just within New Jersey. Forget about all over the country. My son goes to Indiana. There's some really cool breweries out there. They're doing some wacky stuff that the kids the younger people are really into, which
I don't kids.
I don't consider. Well, it's funny to me.
If you can vaccinate a 12-year-old, why can't they drink beer? I mean,
I agree with you. You know, they do that in Europe, right? You're fine. You can drink any age.
Yeah.
But he comes back with these beers and they're like guava, mango, banana, and marshmallow. And I'm like, that's not beer. That's alcoholic fruit juice. And they're all into that stuff. Slush beers where they like kind of freeze and then, you know, and that kind of, I like hoppy beers, cloudy, hazy beers, but I like beer, like IPAs that taste like beer. Not like you'd stand a fork up in it when it's some weird concoction, but it's all over the place. I mean, you just see
it. But Mitch, the beauty of that is they'll make, you can find anything. That's the great joy now of these breweries taking chances and doing some different things. Part of it is you need to, I find it funny. It's a really interesting conversation that you put out an expression. Let's say a brewery will do, they'll run their series. If they're more known for IPAs, they're more known for sours, saisons, whatever. But there's always that, even for us, it's saying, all right, well, what's next?
Right.
Rather than be happy with, we have 12 taps and we have 12 things on tap. Okay, that's great. But what are you making next?
Right. Well, it's become such a competitive space.
Right. Right.
It's also a business. So they might try different things and see if their following likes it, wants to, is interested in whatever, like they have a lot of these places have hard seltzer lines now,
right?
Because that's become in, and some of the people that are maybe less beer drinkers, they'll drink the hard seltzer if they're more into wine and things like that. They don't want to drink the beer. So part of it's appealing, you know, as from a business standpoint, I think.
Absolutely.
But they're definitely artists. There's a place near me called Untied. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's a brewery, and it's in this industrial park and whatever, and you wouldn't know it was there. But my friend's son worked there one summer, and now we go all the time. There's a bunch of those in Jersey. But so maybe you can share with me. So I'm a bourbon guy, but I don't know anything beyond like what I see on the shelves, like what's going on in this region. Let's talk about, you know, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, upstate New York, what kind of things are going on in not just bourbon, but in the distillery, you know, area in this area that you visited that you think are cool that we should know about.
Well, it's like everything else. You ask me what my favorite distillery is.
And depends on what kind of liquor, right? And what kind
of, well, it is, but you know, what my favorite brewery is and things like that. But I always say it's the next one. I mean, it really is
the same way. I don't have a favorite. I have ones that I like.
Now we have
a lot.
I think there are, I can list a bunch of them that become ones that we love and we'll talk about them, but there's always a new experience. There's always something, even if you've tried it before.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Looking to get into podcasting? Maybe to market your business for your own enjoyment or because you have a message you want to get out there. One of One Productions is a New Jersey-based studio just over the George Washington Bridge that caters to the booming business of podcasting. They offer a comfortable atmosphere using the latest technology available to record your podcast. And they are a full-service media company offering both audio and video production services, creating both audio and video podcasts, as well as video shorts for business and personal use. Professional audio equipment packages are available through their website for all budgets, and be sure to check out their podcast guesting kit, created specially for our listeners. Care for your health. Care for the planet, and look flippin' great doing it. North Authentic is a conscious hair care marketplace offering the cleanest brands from around the world. Their pro stylists curate only the most fabulous non-toxic hair products with better-for-you shampoos, serums, masks, and more that actually give you gorgeous hair without hurting your health or the planet. Hey, you've only got one life, one planet, and one glorious mane. Might as well treat them all as best you can, right? Try a 100% clean hair care routine prescribed just for you using their link in the show notes. If you don't see a big, beautiful difference in how your hair looks and feels, you can tell them they're crazy. Do you battle chronic pain, stress, anxiety, or depression? Well, if you take any supplements or you're interested in natural alternatives, you need to know about findyourhealthyplace.com. Find Your Healthy Place has thousands of supplements to help you live a better quality of life, as well as natural solutions for chronic pain, stress, anxiety, depression, sleeplessness, and much, much more. Need guidance? Use their live chat feature and talk to a wellness consultant right on their website. And be sure to use our coupon code TAEPODCAST for all your purchases to get the best prices at findyourhealthyplace.com. Follow their links in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
Maybe this brewery and the grain, that's the thing when you, so what's really, you know, we've come back over the last couple of weeks, Keystone Rose and Rye.
Okay.
Stolen Wolf Distillery in Lititz, Pennsylvania has now brought back Keystone Rose and Rye, which is a heritage grain. Rye is basically a cover crop. It's a crop that farmers would use to, you know, save the land. And then they would go back and plant another crop over the top.
Yeah, rye never used to be like a craft liquor. It used to be like the crap that, you know, nobody was. Now you have all kinds of great ryes.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things is there were, I mean, when you look back pre-prohibition time, there were, you know, some amazing rye producers. And it was, you know, when you look at some of the heritage where, you know, some that would gravitate more towards rye. So there were a bunch of good ryes, Old Overholt being, you know, one of them, which is out in West Overton Village in Scottsdale, Pennsylvania. So they're distilling now for the first time in over 100 years. Wow. And they're doing a Monongahela style rye.
Monongahela?
Monongahela style rye, which is based, you know, on
a river, a reservoir or something?
There's a valley. There's the Monongahela Valley. No, it is. I mean, that's,
yeah, it's a region, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But, okay, you know, we just had this conversation recently on my podcast is, you know, is Monongahela a brand, a style? What's the governing criteria of it to say, if you want to put that on a label,
yeah,
what does it have to follow? Because really, you know, you could put anything on a bottle and say it's cola, but there has to be some characteristic.
You can't say it's Coca-Cola because they have a trademark. I would think.
I think now that you said that, you just have
region,
to,
right?
Wouldn't yeah, if you be? Just said that on your podcast, you have to pay now to Coca-Cola.
I know. I owe him some money. That's only a bill, I'm sure. Yeah, exactly.
So not to get too far off, but so Keystone Rose and Rye, Laura Fields and the Fields Foundation has been working very hard to bring this heirloom grain back to Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And so Stolen Wolf just released their bottles that have been distilled now over 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing, so when you think of rye, there's different characteristics. Once you change the grain, you get a whole, this is so floral and it's fruity.
Right.
I like rye.
Yeah.
It's wonderful, but a lot of people now don't know, you know, have not heard about it. So
right,
we were just at George Washington's Mount Vernon Distillery, uh-huh, and through coming together, they distilled rose and rye at that distillery. And it's a phenomenal experience because they're distilling the same way George Washington would with, you know, fires under the stills. And it's an amazing experience.
That's cool.
Now, I think talking through that still is that, you know, there are some amazing grains that are being used that are being brought to these distilleries,
right,
different corns, you know, different barleys and malting and all these ways of processing the distillate and fermenting and open air fermenting and wild yeast. And this is a great time. If you're a distilled spirits drinker, you know, bourbon, rye, whiskey, this is, you know, new American single malts in the United States are just blowing up. Great single malt distillery. And I don't want to slate any of them,
but they're not Scotch, right? I mean, they can't be called Scotch unless they're right from Scotland, right?
They're from Scotland.
They're just single malt whiskey, basically.
Yep. Yep. And okay. Old Line Spirits down in Baltimore, Arch and Mark are distilling some just tremendous spirits. And again, I don't want to say they're not, but when I think right now, and again, we've been introduced to them and just love what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's interesting because, you know, as a drinker, I mean, and I guess this was part of your journey, right? I don't know a lot of this stuff. I mean, I read stuff, I see stuff, I get magazines. It seems to be that there's a flock of the herd of the industry that goes from, you know, it started with some of the bigger vodka brands that then got sold, and then bourbon became hot, and then rye, you know, they're coming out with rye now, gin, and it seems to go. I've now tequila, I know, is hot. There's all these different, not just tequila, but agave and mezcal, which is just, you know, as you know, a different region of Mexico, whatever, but they have all kinds of weird rules down there. I've been trying to help a client import a tequila. I mean, it's all kinds of weird rules, but yeah. So it seems to be that the herd of consumers, right, go to, and now a lot of the stars are getting into, I think tequila is like the thing right now, right?
It'll tequila, be something bourbon, else. I mean, anything they can put their name to, and yeah, obviously it's an income source.
Right. Of course,
because it's an investment of the name. I would also say to that, I don't know who was the first one to start it. The first one that comes to my mind is Dan Aykroyd, with his affiliation. But I think that the one key element to all that is, if it doesn't taste good.
Right. Of course. Then you just put the name on a bottle. What's the point?
Yeah. People aren't going to buy it. Right. It's just, you know, I think that's important. It's got to, hey, we distilled this. Would you put your name to it? But it's not good. And I think the public will just reject it.
Well, I think that's what's cool about the craft industry, right? Because you find these things, like you said, that sure, you may be able to go into a store regionally and find whatever's in the bottle, but you can't really get, you know, stuff in your area unless you go visit and you kind of search them out. So I think, and thus the name of your podcast, right? It's kind of, it is an adventure, right? You're always looking for.
Yeah.
I mean, now I get, how long you've been doing the podcast?
We're wrapping up 2 years in December.
Yeah, so you probably have a pretty steady flow of people that are introducing you from, you know, you meet somebody who owns a distillery and then he says, oh, my good friend down in Maryland has a distillery down there and you should check that out and all that kind of stuff, right? You kind of get passed around. And that's what's happened to me too. I get introduced to entrepreneurs every day as opposed to me having to find them like I did at the beginning. But I'm sure you find some real gems out there that are things that, you know, you once you run out, you got to go, you're going to have to make another trip because it's not like you're going to get it on the shelf. But I find a lot of local, like small liquor stores tend to be carrying, you know, some more craft type of things. Now, I guess some of them are craft distilleries that are now owned by some of the big brands, right? Because there's some major brands that, just like in the beer industry, they've bought up a lot of these distilleries and they still operate independently. But it, you know, it's a like Buffalo Trace, right? Is a huge, I think there's like four or five, right? Big brands that own a ton of stuff. Like in the wine business, Gallo, I think owns 300 brands of wine.
Yeah.
So you'd never know it was them.
Yeah. You could drive down the road and all those grapes belong to, you know, one or two large conglomerates. And you just think that they're all independent, small little wineries. And
yeah.
I guess, you know, you're right to the point about what you're saying with liquor stores. You know, a lot of the, again, there's placement coming from these small independent craft producers.
Yeah.
And they are making their way to those shelves because I believe what's most important is the consumers walking in and they're looking at the name brands that they're familiar with.
Right.
But they are looking for something different. They're looking for
no question about it.
A different experience.
Right.
And that's what's going that, you know, beer, wine, all those things. People are looking for a new, different experience. Maybe they just want to, you know, they're having friends over or it's, you know, just whatever, the big game. I don't know. But I think that that may be a different mindset as to why these smaller liquor stores and look, if they can make money, they're going to put them on the shelves. They're going to open up and say, hey, this is our craft section.
Right.
So
no, there's no question. I mean, I think that the consumer beyond you and me is relies on that. They're going to go to the local guy and the guy wants to build a relationship with him. And he's, you know, he'll say, well, you should try this. This is a great distillery. He's going to tell you a story. I mean, I drink a lot of IPAs and I find a lot of local brews from some of the local stores that I know here that introduce me to them. You know, that I don't necessarily get to the brewery all the time because it's in South Jersey or, you know, upstate New York or whatever, you know, but I was up, you know, it's funny. I was in, for my anniversary last year, we went up to Saratoga. Like things were just starting to open up. You had to wear a mask. And I guess Cooperstown has a distillery. I think it's called Cooperstown Distillery. They had a bar, a bourbon bar in Saratoga where they would then bring all their stuff. It was only their stuff. And they had some tremendous, at least in terms of my palate.
But your palate's the right one. If you enjoy it, see that.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't say fill in the blank big name distiller.
Right. You like can still like it.
Do you know, we just had this conversation. So one of the things that Dawn and I have been doing in our house is we've amassed so much in the house now
that imagine.
We will never be able to drink it all in our lifetime.
Right.
And we find more.
Right.
So we have been doing these dinner parties and, you know, one of the guests that we just had, you know, is more of a national bourbon drinker.
Yeah.
And he comes in and he says, wow, you have stuff I've never even seen before.
Right. Of course.
Now we still have the national stuff because, you know, that's great stuff. I mean, it's just wonderful, delicious bourbon. You know, we love it.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you start to go again to these small craft producers, there are names here. Like you said, Cooperstown Distillery. I never would have known that there was one of these distilleries in this little town where baseball is known for.
Right.
And there are quite a few breweries in and around there. We were just up in upstate New York and I was looking at the map and go, you know, if I make a quick left, I can get out to Cooperstown and make a quick right and we can get back to Vermont. But we had so many other places we wanted to stop.
Yeah. I mean, there's a ton, but you know, it's funny because, so I got a bottle or two, now it's gone. I can't get it down here.
You're a better person than I am. None of this. We don't kill bottles. I hoard them. I have a hard time.
Sipper. Yeah. Well,
yeah, it's gone, it's gone.
You know, it's funny because I do a lot of work for people, especially friends. And sometimes I'm like, listen, you know, I won't charge them or whatever. So they buy me bourbon. It's the same thing. I can't fit them in the closets anymore. It's not like wine where once you open it, either you finish the bottle or give it a week. And, you know, basically it's going to be maybe for cooking, but I wouldn't even recommend that. Liquor keeps for a long, 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 long time. So,
yeah,
you know, you got stuff. There was a brewery that there's a distillery I got introduced to in Newark. All Points. Have you heard of them?
I've heard of them. Yep.
Yeah. So we had it was during COVID, right? So you couldn't, it was interesting because I guess people were trying to be creative during COVID. Like, how do you have events and interact without being in the same room? So the distillery was through, I think Cornell, I went to Cornell. So I think it was the Alumni Association or something. So what happened was you bought a ticket, let's say it was $80. They mailed you two half bottles of their liquor. One was grain. One was a whiskey from grain and the other was a whiskey from something else. And some recipe. And we made cocktails online with this guy. And then they toured the distillery, showed us the whole thing. And it was kind of cool to see how they do it.
It was so much fun watching. I mean, when I say fun, you know, to those businesses that, you know, didn't know what their next, I mean, where they're going to pay their bills when COVID started and they got shut down. Watching them be creative and then starting to have fun with doing, I mean, you couldn't turn on Instagram or Facebook without seeing a whole bunch of, you know, cocktail making classes.
Yeah.
They were all over the place.
Of course, because people are stuck in, they don't know what to do.
Right. You've got all this stuff, you know, on your shelves, because to your point, once you run out of wine, you know that the vodka is still going to be there because it doesn't go bad.
Right.
So now we can still make some cocktails, look around what's in your home. And the knock on wood, I mean, the craft industry, I mean, alcohol sales did well and are still doing well.
They did very well during COVID. You found out who was your wino neighbors because the recycling would go out and it'd be full of wine bottles. It's pretty funny.
Oh my God, beer cans. Full. You're right. That's funny. It was there.
Yeah.
But they've done well and they continue to do well. And I can tell you, even some of the, you know, cocktail bars, the craft distillers or brewers kind of came back, but some of these craft cocktail or craft distillers, some of them have not opened their tasting rooms, one because of some restrictions or, you know, impediments to really opening the way they would want to. But the other is because they're crushing on bottle sales.
And the last thing they need is to somebody come in, test positive for COVID, then they got to shut down.
Then they got to shut down. Or the staff.
It's not worth it to them.
Somebody gets COVID, test positive, and now, you know, they have to there's that balance, right? But they're doing well, and that's good to hear.
Yeah.
Cornell, huh? Who's a famous the first person that pops into my head is besides you as a Cornell graduate?
A famous Cornell graduate?
Yeah.
Jimmy Smits went to Cornell.
I was thinking Joe DeCenta.
Who's Joe DeCenta?
Spartan up, man.
I don't know who he is.
Joe started the Spartan industry. 70s. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And now he's with their Spartan industry, Tough Mudder. Yeah.
he's a Cornell grad. I didn't know that.
He's a Cornell grad.
There you go. The guys who started Lyft are from Cornell.
It's Cornell, man. There's so many people that come out of there. It's like that pretty hidden funny. Secret. It's a great, yeah. I was at the campus. I like that bridge across the gorge.
Yeah, those are nice, huh? But yeah. they still have the cages over them so you can't jump.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for people like me that are scared out of their wits of heights, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. So when I was at Cornell, we set up this rideshare service, kind of like Lyft, but there was no computers. There was no internet or anything. And because everybody needed a ride to go somewhere to get home, whatever. So we had this board, kind of electronic type of thing you'd call and whatever. And then the university shut us down. They're like, you can't run a business out of your dorm. Like, what? So I was like 10 years or two
early.
Can you imagine
where Facebook would be today if they... If they followed the same path.
Yeah.
So you were Uber before Uber.
I missed my calling. Exactly. Oh,
man. Trademark. You should have trademarked that at least.
Rich guy. Exactly. I remember what we called it. It was called CRIS, Computerized Ride Information Service. And that didn't last very long. And we put ads in the paper and everything. We have people calling us, put their name in and they shut us down.
Come on, Mitch. That's where you just, you know, get a storefront or something.
I know.
Pretend.
I wasn't creative enough as a freshman. I was like, okay, you know, whatever. So moved on to the next thing.
You know, a registered business in the Cayman Islands, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, if I knew that in those days. So tell me, I know you've met a lot of people along the way. You've met a lot of owners and operators and so forth. Any stories that stick out, not necessarily has anything to do with whether they're you know, better or worse or whatever, but just some really interesting people that you met along the way that you could share?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, part of what I like meeting and talking to people, and I like learning about their story. And, sure. you know, some of them, you know, again, this is a similar thread with, you know, an entrepreneur side of things. And that's when, you know, I take the podcast from trying to be more personal and entrepreneurial in the conversation. And we'll taste through the expressions, because what's important for me is understanding what that, you know, whether it's a brewer or a distiller, what their ideas were when they decided to craft that. The stories that really are interesting are the ones to me that, you know, talk about how they started.
Yeah.
The conversations of, yeah, I bought a home brewing kit and my family has a family history of distilling, you know, and some of that is legal and much of that is illegal.
Right.
Those are, not one or two are people that stand out. I mean, the people that we talk to, everyone has this wonderful story. We, you know, just again, being down at George Washington's Mount Vernon Distillery, you know, Steve Bayshore, who's the head distiller, you know, got into distilling because you want to talk to somebody about history. Steve is an amazing historical mind, but he's into milling and the importance that milling has made in this country. So George Washington had a mill. They mill today. It's, you know, you can see the same methods of milling today that you would have seen in that time in the 17, 1800s that George Washington was there. Now, Steve was not a distiller. I mean, he didn't have that background, but he took his milling background because you're milling the grain to make the mash that you're going to ferment, that you're going to distill. He's become a wonderful, incredible distiller. But you know, the people that have come into his life who have helped him hone his craft. Again, that's part of that conversation. And, you know, who's helping him do this and this, but talking to Steve and just his story, but there's every day there's another story.
Right. Has he been on your podcast? You did an episode?
Yes, he was a guest. He was episode 50. He was a guest. And we just finished covering and being down there for the Rosen distillation at their distillery. So we interviewed, they don't even have to be distillers, ciders, meaders, winers. I mean, Bob McDonald, Robert and Sherry McDonald, okay. They have Dancing Star Farm. And that's where a lot of these heritage grains are coming from that people are using. They're the ones that are growing the Rosen rye. They're the ones that are experimenting with all these heritage grains that are now coming to the forefront of what we're drinking or what we will drink in the next couple of years. So we interviewed Robert and Sherry. We interviewed Laura Fields. Laura does an amazing job promoting what she's doing as far as the agricultural side of things. And that's why she's bringing these amazing, she promotes these amazing grains and she wants to promote the farmers and yeah. She wants to get word out about what they're doing. And she puts on an event every year, the American Whiskey Convention. This coming year will be the 6th anniversary. Can't wait to hear more about that. But she's bringing over 60 distilleries, and there were some breweries there. That's how we met Old Bedford Brewing Company. You want to try bourbon, whiskey, rye. You want to try all those things.
Yeah.
Over 250 opportunities to try.
Where is this located?
Philadelphia. The last one was at the Independent Seaport Museum in Philly. But it seems like the venue rotates, and with COVID, I'm waiting to hear where the next one will be.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had Laura Fields on. She's so dynamic. She's so and her rich rich knowledge of the whiskey industry and the history of whiskey is just wonderful. For that podcast, we interviewed Lisa Roper Wicker of Widow Jane. And
Widow Jane, where are they located? Where's that? They're
distilling? In Brooklyn.
Oh, they distill in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
I had no idea. I like Widow Jane.
Now, again, talking to Lisa and her many vast years of experience and, you know, how she fits in with George Washington's distillery at Mount Vernon and you know, the processes and even the things that they do today when she started working with them are still being implemented, changes that she's helped them make, and just all that comes. So these conversations, and then we get to meet people like Kim and Tom Bard of the Bard Distillery out in Kentucky, who, you know, were there for the distillation, and, you know, their background is NASCAR. So now they have a couple year old distillery, which we can't wait to go out and visit and see them and talk to them. So, you know, we get to meet these people, and so the idea for this is we're going to take it from, you know, the ground and talk to the people that are helping distilling. And we talked to Eric Wolf, and, you know, when you talk about the people we get to meet, when we were at the initial Rosen distillation, I got to sit down with Dick Stoll, and Dick was the last man to distill Rosen Rye at the Baumgartner Distillery in Pennsylvania. And, you know, it shut down, but I got a chance to sit down and talk to Dick, and this is a most humble man. And Eric and the Stoll family, Aviana and Jim, the Wolf family, Eric, Jim, and Aviana went and they collaborated with Dick Stoll. And Eric's, the conversation we have and just what Dick had imparted with Eric in growing their distillery there. Stoll and Wolf is an incredible distillery out in Lititz. They're just the great people. That's again, I mean, we could sit here all day and talk about, you know, some of these people, but go out for yourselves and find these breweries and cideries and, you know, all these people that are doing these great things in your area.
Are there some areas where there's more of a concentration? I mean, obviously in Kentucky there is, if you're looking for bourbon, the Bourbon Trail, but I mean, is there a concentration of distilleries in a certain part of upstate New York or a certain part of Western Pennsylvania, or are they just spread out all over the place?
Well, I mean, they're spread out, you know, but then you go to a brewery along the way, or you find, you know, that's one of the beautiful thing about, you know, where we are with our map technology on our phones.
Yeah. You can just almost find anything.
Just type in brewery nearby and all these things pop up. Distillery nearby. They all pop up. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you in Philadelphia, easily, I would have to count, but you're talking within a 30, 40 mile radius. There's easily 60, 70 distilleries.
Distilleries.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, we're talking New Jersey. I mean, maybe it's not that high. Maybe we're 60, but you're talking South Jersey. You're talking, you know, Philadelphia itself. I think right now we're probably at 20 distilleries.
In the city.
In the city. And then you go outside and you go to the, you know, I mean, in the city and in the suburbs a little bit, 20 easily.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that many just within your area.
Yeah. That's what keeps us busy on the weekends. I mean, you look at an area. So we're heading up to Bethlehem, the Allentown, Lehigh Valley area.
Yeah.
There are so many distilleries up there. There are so many, you know, places, breweries. And if you want a good time, go to Allentown or go to Bethlehem and visit some of these breweries and distilleries that are up there. They'll just surprise you that how many are actually there.
That's the Lebanon Valley, right? Basically.
Lehigh Valley.
I meant.
Lehigh Valley. Yep.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. That's where they, it used to be Bethlehem Steel, right? But there's a huge, casino up there, right? Isn't there?
There's a casino. There's, they have, an outdoor, concert venue there. Right across the street from where the old stacks are, there's Social Still Distillery. They have a restaurant there, first-rate food. You know, down in Bethlehem, you get Christmas City Spirits. I mean, again, go down to Easton. You've got County Seat. You've got Gallows Hill. Again, I would leave people out, but they're there, and they're all doing different stuff. They're doing different stuff and making great craft spirits.
Right. Well, it's good to know. So you don't have to go to the Midwest or travel far to find good local stuff. You just get in the car and drive to these different towns. I mean, I would Google it first and do some planning.
Google it. Yeah, but we've made it up to North Jersey. You know, New Jersey Distilling is up there. Corgi's up there. I mean, some of the ones that you mentioned, again, it's just, hey, we're going to take a trip to North Jersey. Let's see what we can find.
Now you don't necessarily, you don't go to record a podcast, right? I mean, those are set up.
We'll load your equipment up
and you're in the car driving.
Yeah, we'll do both. I mean, essentially I don't anticipate, you know, doing a podcast interview. We just want to get out. We just want to see what's in the area and just travel and enjoy.
You ever do things on the fly? I mean, you walk into a distillery, you meet the owner, say, hey, you want to do an episode? And you're boom, you set up and do it right there.
Mitch, I wish that would happen because it would save us a lot of time. But, you know, because they're busy. I mean, they weren't anticipating somebody showing up with a microphone that day.
Right.
Exactly. But yeah, so down the road, either we'll, you know, now, you know, you do this enough as you do. We talked about prior is like doing more Zoom calls. You used to do a lot of this in person.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes like what we did with the West Overton, we brought back the bottles and the expressions that they were offering. And then we did the Zoom call and tasted through. So, you know, some of these places were like, hey, I have this now. Why don't we just do a Zoom call and we'll taste through and we'll talk about and introduce. But I there's nothing that replaces the noise in the background. And
yeah, right.
You know, especially we just visited Manitowney Steelworks. They're in the Pottstown area. And Manitowney has a relationship with Sly Fox, which is right across the street. So that's a brewery. But we were there for a distillation day talking to Max Pfeffer. And, you know, the stills are going, you know, there's noise. But I like that because, you know, we're at a live working distillery. We were at, you know, Auburn Road Vineyards in New Jersey. And yeah, they're open. We're outside. There's birds chirping and people drinking and wine's glass clinking. And I like that sound. Yeah. I like that.
Well, that's the social part of what we do. So, okay. So the podcast is audio and video. It's on YouTube.
Nah, we just do audio right now.
Okay.
We
so you can find them on all the directories.
Yeah. We have a little YouTube site that we're adding some videos. I started, there's a cameraman that follows me around at some of the events. We're going to be at, December 4th. We're going to be at the Valley Forge Beer and Cider Festival in Oaks. So we're going to be doing some roaming around of talking to some breweries and cideries. That one is still, tickets are still available. They're doing two sessions. So tickets are still available. They're not doing too many of these festivals right now. So if you can get out to Oaks, Pennsylvania,
that's
it's just outside of Valley Forge.
After Thanksgiving, right?
Yes. I think it makes a good Hanukkah gift too. If you're looking to get somebody a nice Hanukkah gift.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, all right. So if, so people want to find you, they can find the podcast on Apple, Google, all the platforms, right? Amazon, Spotify, the whole thing.
Fermented Adventure
and
Podcast.
And you guys have a website too, right?
Fermentedadventure.com.
Okay, good. People should subscribe, follow you, listen to the episodes, especially
Dawn
if they want to expand their
palate. Dawn just
set
up our Twitter account. We're on Twitter now. We're going to play with that. I don't know. This is fun. Mitch, I would tell you, I mean, if you would have asked me 4 years ago, would I have been talking to you and introduced to you? I'm like, that would have been beyond my wildest dreams. But this is my by far the most favorite thing I've done with Fermented Adventures, talking to you.
Yeah, no. Oh, I appreciate that. But
and we're sober. This is weird. We have to fix that next time.
The Friday
I mean, I don't
morning.
Want just under. We don't have to be drunk, but just you know, having some stuff in front of us.
Well, maybe we could do an episode on your show, and we'll line up a bunch of stuff. We could do some tastings and share and talk.
I think we got the concept for the next one.
Have to give
one,
me a shopping list of some things I have to get that are a little off. You know,
we'll send you samples.
Okay, cool.
You know,
let's do it.
Yeah, we'll send you samples.
Well, Rich, I can't thank you enough joining me on a Friday morning and sober and everything. and it's the fermentedadventure.com.
Fermentedadventure.com. Fermented Adventure, the podcast.
You can always search you on social media. The whole thing,
Fermented Adventure. Yeah. And like what we want, here's what I would say, Mitch. And the best part about this is, you know, Andrew Poole introduced us together, right?
Yep.
You know, we are always looking the conversations we have with people that say, oh, you have to try here or you have to go here.
Right.
And, you know, then it's really fun now to start seeing people that see you because they hear you on the podcast or see you on your social media and they recognize you.
Yeah.
That's weird.
I know. It is strange.
But, you know, like, you know, we were just at Moo Duck Brewery. This is out in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Moo Duck. Mike and Kristen Brubaker, amazing brewers, but they're turning us on to some other things. You know, they were just in Asheville, North Carolina. And that's what happens.
Right.
It's like you have a conversation and someone tells somebody and that's why we're together today. And I'm grateful to be just get a chance to talk to you for a while and talk about just what I'm passionate about. This is fun.
And it's fun. And it helps the industry and it helps these people that are trying to, you know, make their way in the world. And that's what I like about the podcast too, because I meet the most interesting entrepreneurs, people that have succeeded and failed and learned and want to share. And now they're really doing well. And it's just, it's been a great journey. And I'm glad to hear that you guys are having the same similar experience, you know? So
if you're in Bethlehem this weekend, we'll be in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania on Saturday. We'll be somewhere. We're going to do a little, tasting of a lot of stuff and we'll have a good time.
All right, Rich, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mitch. Cheers.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.